What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn on the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Will Parkinson NFL on YouTube. Always have to now plug the YouTube channel. People have been requesting it forever, and I finally dove into it. YouTube is a cesspool, but appreciate everybody that goes on there and listens and comments. Michael Meagan on the pod today. Meags, we are doing a home and home. Just talked a little draft season. So Brock Bowers, pick 10, pick 73. Quarterback in round four, things of that nature. So make sure you guys check that out. Only one episode this week from the TOJ pod, and then we'll have TOJ talks on Saturday, and then we'll be full throttle, three episodes a week, pretty much until the summer, and then it'll probably still be three episodes a week somehow. Meags, we're gonna do a little, got some like 14 or 15 rapid fire, you know, Q&A questions. Let's rip through those first. How we doing? How we feeling? I don't know if I did that right. You know, I had to mimic Joe's how we doing, how we feeling, but how we doing, Meags?
Feeling good, you know, kind of just want the draft to happen. Excited to answer the questions. I'm sure we're going to get, you know, some nice discourse going. We'll have, maybe we'll agree, maybe we'll disagree. So I'm just really excited to get it rolling.
Yeah, no, me too. So let's get started. Let's get started with a couple free agency ones, and I'll try to move into the draft ones. Who on this team, I guess this isn't really a free agency one, but who on this team from Chris Roland, Chris Rabby Blast, EM, whatever, I don't know how to pronounce his Twitter name, but who on this team this year has the potential to take the Quincy Williams jump to an all-pro level season in 2024? I'll let you start, and then I'll roll with it.
I mean, I think the easy answer, and it's probably cheating, is Garrett. Because he'll actually get good quarterback play. He has 2,000 yard years. He hasn't been like Garrett, great player, has not been like all pro receiver, like good yet, which is partly to like he's still developing his player, probably due to this quarterback situation. But if you're looking for someone who can have like CeeDee Lamb's year was so ridiculous last year, that's very like high standards. But like if Garrett Wilson is 1,500 yards, I don't think anyone should be surprised. And I think he's the one who's going to benefit the most from what the Jets have done on offense this offseason.
This is also cheating. I think it's Breece Hall, and I think there's a really good shot he wins Offensive Player of the Year. I think I said with Jason McCourty on Saturday's episode, like if he's the top five finisher in Offensive Player of the Year, is anybody surprised? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's never made a Pro Bowl. He's never made an All-Pro team. He's never been Player of the Month, if I'm not mistaken. Like he's not won any of these awards, and I still think people are like, oh, the Jets suck. So Breece Hall's cool, but like, you know, we saw the one Breece Lightning thing and then he tore his ACL and Stephen A. Smith still thinks his ACL is torn and the whole thing. I just think with Breece, it's like Quincy was really fun and exciting in 2022. He still had made some mistakes and the Jets weren't good. Last year, he came out firing and was obviously amazing and ended up being all pro. So I'll go Breece Hall there. I think both answers are probably cheating. If I wanted to go outside the box, I'd say, I guess, Jermaine maybe is somebody that like takes the year three in the system leap and as a defensive guy, but I don't know that Jermaine.
Yeah, it's either him or pro level. I mean, I don't want to say this. Well, not that I would love for it to happen. It's just like the man's played, I think, 13 games in 2 years. AVT is also an answer for this.
Yeah,
but like if he's just fully healthy, he's playing one position. He knows he's playing right guard. The offensive line stays relatively healthy, where he doesn't have to move from right guard, and he gets played next to a veteran stalwart like Morgan Moses, and Tippmann is, you know, a steady presence at center. That's probably the best incubation, like who he's played with. Like, kind of feels like everything could come together for him next year.
Davy Knuckles, can I have some money? No. someone asked, signing Ashton Davis would be great. What's the hold up? Looks like Beckton is close to signing with Dallas. Based on his market, he's probably getting a league minimum. What is his mood? He had high expectations coming to free agency. He has to be disappointed with lack of the demand. I'll start with this one. Mekhi Becton's had interest in suitors. You know, you heard at the combine things like Cincinnati, Dallas, Green Bay, other places. He's a talented guy. He was a former first-round pick and had some really good tape in year one and had some okay tape at points this year. He's missed two full seasons, sometimes mentally not the most locked in. I don't know if he's the same athlete he was 3 years ago, pre-multiple reconstructive knee surgeries at points. So I'm not surprised. I don't think it'll be the vet minimum. I think it'll be more than that. I think probably be 1 for 5 with upside to 10 if he plays well. Ashton Davis, the holdup is he wants to start. And I don't think that he probably thinks he's going to start here. And that's probably why. And I also think teams know that they have to wait 18 days and they won't gift the Jets a comp pick, which we talked about, whether it's Lawson or Davis or somebody else signing elsewhere. The Jets will get a fourth round comp pick next year for Bryce Hoff. So I think that's the Davis and Becton thing. Do you feel any differently about either of those two?
No, like I said, I just think Becton isn't the same, like I said, like you said, the same athlete he was. And, you know, I think there's effort issues. I think there's commitment issues to how locked in he's going to be. And teams are going to know that, like, you know, the Jets don't, they're not protecting an asset anymore. He's gone. Like, people talk.
People ask around. Yeah, I was going to say, people talk, people ask around. Yeah. This is a fun one. I guess we'll go, man, I'm trying to see if I can say it. There's a lot of draft questions. This one from Jim Jets. We done in free agency until after the draft. You think who else could we add? I don't know if they're done. I would say they're probably done until, you know, post-draft. That said, you know, I think a lot of these guys, if you're a vet, like, why would you want to sign right now?
Yeah.
You have to, why, like, if you're Dalvin Cook, for whatever you want to, we don't, like, he was doing an interview and a lot of the stuff is classic Dalvin Cook, but he did say something that is very true. I want to see how the chips fall before I go and sign with the team. If you're David Bakhtiari, why, if the Jets go draft a left tackle, in what world are you coming to the Jets? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, turf aside. To me, I think these guys can avoid offseason workouts. They can avoid having to be in the building. They can go train with their own trainers and train off to the side. Quan Alexander did it a couple years ago when he signed with the Jets. Like, that's what's going to happen now. That's why it's shocking Jadeveon Clowney signed when he did. I think they're probably mostly done, though, until after the draft. I would say there's 2 weeks till the draft. People are locked in, and a lot of these vets are, you know, Jets are going to have voluntary workouts here in a week and a half. Like, I wouldn't be rushing back into the building if I was a vet.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're really going to sign anyone. Like I said, I think Dobbins is maybe something that happens after the draft, or insert veteran running back here after the draft. I think the free agent Jets fans are keeping the most attention to, because I wouldn't fully rule it out, is Justin Simmons. But it looks like if Justin Simmons hadn't signed now, why wouldn't he sign until like June or May?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think the other one is MVS. I still don't think that's totally out of the question. But I guess, again, if they draft a pass catcher at 10, probably less likely. If they wait until 73, do you want more of a veteran presence early in the year? That could make some sense. We'll move to – these are mostly drafts, so we'll move to this one. This is an interesting one from Finnegan's Flight Crew. Hardest player to get a read on in the 2024 draft?
Amarius Mims.
I
– Doesn't have a lot of tape. Incredibly freaky athlete. Has played right tackle. Has played left tackle. Trained on both sides. If he hits, he's a all-pro level talent. But is he going to hit? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll go. This is an interesting question. I'm trying to think if I can, like, roll out. Jackson Powers Johnson seems to be one that people are having a tough time getting a read on. I left Mobile and said he's a surefire top 25 pick. This dude was amazing. And then I've seen multiple Lance Zierlein, Brett Coleman, other folks said, oh, he's not a first-round player. That's what I'm hearing. He's a second-round type of buzz. I'm only saying from a read perspective is people are seeing something I'm not, and I haven't seen, and that makes me think, do I have to rewatch him? Like, did I miss something here? Was it just a really good week in Mobile? He's a massive dude. Like, I think he's a much better prospect than Tippmann was, and Tippmann went top, whatever, 40, whatever he went. So,
he went like 44, I think, yeah.
Yeah, 44.
I think it's medical for JPJ, to be honest with you. I don't think it's talent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's hard to get him. And then the other one I'll go with a hard to get a read on. Tavondre Sweat is one of the most, like, I don't understand, because the tape's amazing, but everything else screams like this is a problem. You got what, he got a DUI a week ago. He didn't wait at a Mobile. He clearly played overweight, but then he tested amazing and lost all the weight and he was fine, but he missed his combine podium multiple times. It was just, if he's there at 73, I'm still probably taking him.
Yeah.
He's a good all player. That said, him and him next to Q and Redick and Jermaine or JFM and base downs would be,
yeah,
it'd be nuts. Work. It'd be nuts. We'll move on to Gus T-O-O-N asked, if we could trade down and still realistically take Bowers in an offensive tackle, how far down do you have to go and what do you think would still be available? I think if Bowers doesn't go 10 or 15, as you mentioned, he's probably falling to like late teens, maybe 20.
Yeah, I would say like 24.
Yeah, so I guess you could trade down. Cincinnati's probably the spot. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you want to go further in that. I think the draft starts to get really similar at that point. I don't know how they're going Bowers and a tackle. I assume you mean a second round tackle, because otherwise I don't. They're not getting two first round picks for 10 overall.
Unfortunately,
and not. Especially not two first round picks this year. They're not getting like they're not getting 11 and 23 from Minnesota. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure on that one. This one's interesting. Good friend, obviously, of the show and former was a trainer when I was playing at Towson. Caleb asks, who are your pro comps for the top three receivers in this draft? I'll defer to you to start with this one.
Marv, which this one actually annoys me that people don't think this is good enough. Marv is AJ Green. AJ Green was awesome. Anyone who says like that's not a good enough player, AJ Green should be in the Hall of Fame. That's one of like the five best receivers I've watched in my entire life. AJ Green. Neighbors, Jetpack, Brandon Ayuk. And Rome, people throw out Keenan Allen. I just think Rome's like bigger and like he's just more of an outside threat. Rome's the harder one because it's not T, it's not Mike Williams, and he's not as big as Mike Evans. So it's more looking for like just like that standard, like really solid X. Like, I don't think there's like a perfect Rome comp that's in the NFL like today. So that's where I show you he's more of a throwback comp that I have to get. Yeah. I'll come back to me with Rome. But yeah, that the two, I feel very good about Neighbors and Marv.
You know what Rome's been getting a lot of pro comps of? Mm-hmm. And he's a former Aaron Rodgers, probably best ever target.
Well, you get
good. You see any Devontae?
No. Devontae, I
don't know why. I've seen it on Bleacher Report. I've seen it on Walter Football. I saw it on ESPN thing.
Like, not defense their own. Like,
I don't know. I don't know if I see Devontae because that means he's been the best receiver in football in 4 years. But like, maybe. Again, he's not Brandon Marshall, so I'm just like putting that there. But
he's not big enough.
But I feel like the play strength in which he plays through the catch point is very Brandon Marshall like in terms of like it's any 50-50 is 70-30 minimum when you're talking Roman. I'm not just talking like contested catch jump balls. I'm talking like talking balls over the middle. I'm talking late hands where like it's a ball that probably could be 50-50 with like a good corner and it like becomes a better thing. In terms of Neighbors, I like the Brandon Cook, the Jetpack Brandon Cooks one. DJ Moore, I've seen some. I think Connor. I wonder, like, Diggs is probably not the correct comparison, but I feel like the size wise is like there's that 6 foot receiver at 190, 200 pounds just feels like 6 foot, 6'1". Is there a little Odell there?
Yeah. Well, I think the funny thing is like he's a lot like Chase, but he's not Chase at the catch point. Yeah. And that's where, and which is what makes Chase Chase. That's why I don't put that comp on him. But like Neighbors is impossible to tackle. You can run as many slot vertical routes as you want and he will cook because of it. But at the catch point, he's just not as strong and he's just not as reliable as Chase was.
And then Marv, look, I think there's a lot of different comparisons. Again, I don't think he's Julio, but if you told me he ended up being Julio Jones, like I wouldn't tell you you're crazy. No. I like the AJ Green one. I think he's a little bit more – I don't know if it's just because AJ Green was so quiet, like literally like so quiet that – It just felt like that. Oh, the other one for Rome that's interesting was like a little DeAndre-ish, a little D-Hop, similar size.
Hop's not bad. Andre Johnson isn't bad either, but Andre Johnson's a little bit of a ceiling comp for Rome.
I'll never comp anyone Andre Johnson. That's my guy.
He's a good player.
Until I start seeing Rome Odunze beating the shit out of people with his fists, then no one has as deep a voice as Andre Johnson. Just beat the shit out of Courtland Finnegan. but it would be good. Let's move on to the next one. My guy Dom, DC_NY Jets. Adding a player to the safety room is still a need, in my opinion. If the Jets don't address it with a veteran, which way would you lean in the draft and how high of a pick would you waste? We referenced this a little bit on draft season. I'll start here and I'll defer to me because I'm more of the prospects in terms of that. I think the third or fourth round, maybe even into the fifth round, is where you take that shot. Probably not at pick 73. It's probably more pick 111, 134, and then whatever the next one is, 160, 170 something. that's probably the range in which you do it. It's not a great safety class. I'd much prefer the Jets to go the veteran route, especially in this defense where I kind of feel like you kind of want a guy that can just seamlessly come in. And like Tony Adams is a guy that kind of redshirted and thought he had a, Tony Adams actually, I thought had a nice year. I just don't think he can be your best safety. I think if he's your second, probably the worst player in your defense, like you have a pretty good defense, obviously. So I think round four or five is probably the sweet spot for safety. Like the kid out of Wake Forest. I know people like the kid out of Utah, Vaki. Like I'm not going to go the USC route with my boy, but is there any other safeties near you that like in that round four or five range that kind of stand out?
Well, the bad thing about the safety class is there is one safety who I think has like a second round grade, which is Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota. And then the rest are just day three players. So I don't know what's that going to push up the board. Safety isn't a huge premium position that normally gets overdrafted. Like there are people whose like skill sets are intriguing. Like I don't love him, but I do like Bullard on Georgia because I do think he has nickel versatility as well as being a safety. And I do think just getting as many, you know, cerebral players, he's a very high like IQ football player, is just good for the secondary. I think Sauce is like that. I think DJ Reed's like that. I think MC2 is like that. I think that's why the corners have been so good the past 2 years, is while they're good athletes and like I do think how they play the position is kind of important, especially in this defense. But yes, I said this on draft season, they're gonna take a corner and try to make him a safety. And it probably won't go well. Or he'll get picked up on the by the Giants because you didn't protect him on the practice squad.
Oh boy. It's hard to disagree with that. Michael Christopher asked a couple questions. I'll hit on this, and then we'll do one more, and then I have one other question for you. What do you think is the best possible outcome that could be with the Jets' first three picks? Like if you take Bowers at 10, then what positions would you focus on around 3 and 4? Is it better for tackle or playmaker when you do these selections? And then I'll just ask the second one before we hit that. I love Fondo as a prospect, but when Brugler and Kuiper had him as better as a guard and he could play all five positions, how do you rank him if you don't know if he can hold up a tackle? He seems like an AVT clone, and moving AVT around potentially got him hurt and has hindered his development. Are you concerned? I actually really like the second question because it's something that I honestly have not thought a second about. And when you point it out, yeah, it is a little bit of a concern, I think, whenever you move these guys around, especially right guard versus left tackle and things like that, where you're planting off different legs. Fair concern. I actually think that the only reason that I really would be okay with Fontenot at 10 is because he can play all five spots. Because otherwise, like, I don't think he's one of the two or three best tackles. I think he's the third or fourth best, like, offensive lineman type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the sweet spot. We hit on it in draft season, but I think if they go playmaker at 10, I think offensive line, maybe even back-to-back, or offensive line quarterback or offensive line receiver. Like, I think one of the first three picks has to be an offensive lineman. One of the first three has to be a playmaker, and then it's a wild card at the other one. Do you want to hit on both those? Just I didn't even think about the fact that when you just mentioned that, if you're an AVT clone, are you concerned at all with the injury? But I guess probably not, because maybe Fontenot's your left tackle if Tyron Smith walks next year, if you draft him, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if AVT moving around is the reason he had two freak injuries in the Denver like altitude. Like that just might just be unfortunately just bad luck. So I do understand the concerns. I think the biggest thing for Fontenot is just like he's a player that if they drafted him, like I think he's better than John Simpson and could play left guard right away. I don't know if they put him there. They just want him basically as tackle insurance. It's that like he's just an older player that you kind of like reason why you want to play him is because he has so many reps. Like it's not that he doesn't have developing to do. There's a learning curve for anyone in the NFL, but he's a player who whoever takes him should see the field quickly. The Jets don't really have that spot. For me, like I would say, like if they go pass catcher at 10, whether it's Rome or whether it's Brian Thomas or whether Neighbors Falls, or they trade up for more Neighbors or Marv. And then at 73, I said I'm leaning more, like I feel like for you going offensive lineman or even defensive tackle, which I've become more and more just because I think the value is going to be probably the best for that position. And then I would like them to take a quarterback in the fourth round, just be like, Zach Wilson is somehow still on this team, which is very funny. But if they went, Rome, Michael Hall, and Michael Pratt, I'd be pretty happy about it, to be honest with you. But I would say I'll throw this out. If they do trade back and they make like that, they coop their second rounder, Olu, Jalen Polk, Michael Hall, dream first three picks from you, boy.
I don't hate that at all. Jersey Jets fan, it's Bill Barnwell has mentioned this recently. The fact that the Jets kept their second round pick 2025 instead of 2026 for the Eagles for Hassan Reddick makes me think they're considering using that pick to trade up. Do you see that? I've talked about it a bunch.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it's – I also think the Eagles did that on purpose. They were going to get a comp pick, and they just basically accelerated their comp pick if Reddick were to walk. I guess they still could push it out. I think every single pick in 2025 is going to be on the table, whether people like it or not, whether it's during the draft, whether it's the trade deadline. Let's say the Jets did go offensive line and they draft Malachi Corley at 73 and it's just not hitting right away and the Raiders suck. Yeah, I think the picks are on the table again for Devontae or when he realizes catching balls from Bo Nix and Aiden O'Connell sucks. And Antonio Pierce, you know, as much as it was fun, maybe isn't quite as fun in year two. Like, that's a reality. Or is it, you know, I don't know, T. Higgins sticks around and all of a sudden the Bengals are like, you know what, we're going to move off from middle of the year. I'm just using examples, right? Mm-hmm. My point is, like, I think all those picks will be on the table. I don't think it'll cost – I think probably 10, 73 and a two gets you up to like five. Yeah. I think you're feeling really good if you want to do that. So I 100%, I would literally sprint next year's second round pick, which you hope is pick 64 next year for Marv or Neighbors, even Rome at this point. I mean, like that's just the way I feel. I'm going to ask you two quick questions here before we wrap, obviously. And again, make sure you guys check out draft season. This will be out tomorrow afternoon. Draft season will be out in the morning. Again, draft season, Badlands, everyone's going to be at the draft party. So make sure you guys are tuned into that. Quarter Zips, thinking Yeti's coming out soon. You know, all these different types of stuff. Have another big time guest on Saturday's pod. Dan will be back, Buck the Trend. Last two questions here. Joe and Connor did their, you know, top 22 players, kind of tried to rank the roster as currently constituted. We'll play off of kind of similar to what they did in a sense. Who are two guys that you think the fan base is too low on, or even, in terms of where they rank on this roster, and two guys the fan base is way too high on? I'll let you start, and then I'll go.
So going based off of...
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I feel like the NFL is just too low on this player. Like, when I was looking at Joe's, like, I think Joe got asked the question, if everyone's at their best, how would you rank, like, the players on the roster? And I didn't see Sauce at one or two, and I was kind of shocked by that because I think Sauce at his best is the best corner in the NFL, and Sauce is 23 years old, and I don't think people on this roster just fully appreciate how good he is or how hard it is to be a All-Pro in two times in your first 2 years at a player at a position like corner. I feel like that's getting, like, the fact that the Jets literally took someone fourth overall and is on a Hall of Fame track, and they kind of take it for granted. So I would say Sauce, I don't think, is appreciated quite enough by the fan base. I also think Mosley still isn't either. Like, I know Quincy became, like, the flavor of the month, and Quincy deservedly was an All-Pro. And I was happy for Quincy to have that rise. Also happy he did this after the Jets paid him, as seems like the Jets' luck is it happens in his contract year. So that was a fun thing. But I think CJ Mosley is still really good. I think taking that extension really helped with their cap space, shows what kind of person and kind of leader he is. So I would say those are the two players who I think deserve a little more credit. As terms in, like, overrated, I mean, I love the prospect, but like AVT, I just don't know what to expect anymore. Like what we saw happen with Becton and just how his body was after two season-ending injuries, like AVT was a big part of his draft, you know, promise was how athletic he was and how dynamic he was. And I'm not saying it's gone. I just don't bet on him being the same, which I think is something that isn't talked about too much with the fan base. And who else are the Jets? I don't know. The Jets, they're not, I mean, DJ Reed kind of fell off, so I don't think I was really super high on him as much anymore. Yeah, I don't know. I would say that's really just that one. I think the Jets are getting more realistic about their players, which is nice because they actually have good ones.
I'll kind of play off similar. I'm going to take bias aside of podcast. I won't do Conk and JFM and Michael Carter. I'll leave them out of here so I don't get called unbiased. I think people that the fan base is too low on. I actually mentioned Tony Adams before. I think Adams is a better player than he's given credit for. I'm not saying he's some superstar. I'm not saying any of that's the case. I just think he like made plays last year and like honestly his first year starting and he's a converted corner and like was more than adequate. Like, was he perfect? By no means. But I also think like for a younger guy and like his second full year playing safety and first year as a starter in the NFL, like was more than adequate. So I'll go Adams. I don't think he's like a horrible player by any means. I think other guy that the fan base is probably too low on, in a way, like I like the Sauce one. I'm just trying to think of like, I'm going to go back to JFM. I'll go with JFM because like he's a really good player and allows everybody else to do something. Actually, you know what? I won't go JFM. I won't be biased. People are still low on Quinnen. Like, he's arguably a top two interior guy in the league.
Yeah,
he's
probably him and Chris Jones. With Donald retiring, it's
probably him, Chris Jones, and Dexter Lawrence. And Quinnen allows everyone to do so many different things. He, again, another guy, as you mentioned, who top three or four pick. The expectations are high. He's achieved all of them, and now he's gotten paid again. So it's like, you're always going to get more hate. That's just the way it goes. In terms of the people that the fan base is a little too high on, I like DJ Reed. You mentioned he's a potential shout there. I'm going to go like the other group of receivers outside of Garrett and Mike Williams. And I say that because I think people shit on Lazard, and I get it. But I think people are like a little too comfortable with Xavier Gibson and Jason Brownlee having not seen enough. And I just feel like we're doing that's the classic Jets fan, like, oh, like we got to be really high on our guy because he made one.
Bryce Hall, CB1. Like we don't forget.
We don't forget Bryce Hall, CB1, and Michael Carter, RB1, and Zach Wilson, quarterback 1, and all those different
great,
types of things.
Great underrated shout is Echols is much better than
I was just going to say. Echols, if they traded DJ Reed for a second round pick tomorrow and they started Echols, like I don't think the drop off is anywhere near as big as people think it is. And then the other one that I think the fan base is probably a little too high on. I don't want to copy you too much, but like I'm not fully in on Joe Tippmann yet. I think there were some really nice signs. I thought he played well. I don't think league wide everyone was like holy shit, the Jets got a franchise center. I think they were like, he still plays high and he's got injury concerns and like he should be good next year. Like he was good this year, he should be good. I'm not saying he's not good, but like I don't think he's like some top five starter at the center position in the league yet. I think like he's probably better as a guard. I think he's a good center. I think he's probably a slightly better guard, at least right now. I'm not trying to like say he's not good. I don't think that's the case. I just think people are concerned about AVT and the injuries. Like I'm low key concerned a little bit with Tippmann. That's all. He just feels like he's easier to replace because AVT is like a top 15 pick and the Jets traded up for him. So it's a little different. And Christian Darrisaw would be really awesome to have also.
Yeah.
Last question. We're going to do a non-football question here. How emotionally invested are you in? Are you like ready to acknowledge the Mets as like their season is here and like we're going to ignore the first week and then like, are you kind of in yet, or are you slow playing this?
Definitely slow playing it. The Mets pitching staff is, I'm like maybe 3 injuries away from getting a call, so it's getting to be a little scary there. The kids are playing well. Very nervous saying that Brett Beatty looks kind of good because that's been hurt when it comes to prospects before, but he's actually starting to hit. The prospects are doing well, you know, in the AAA, which I think is kind of what this season's really becoming, is just like which one of these guys pops. Like Alvarez was the guy last year. They have a lot of talent in the farm system. They kind of hope will trickle to the top. So I'm not – I didn't have any expectations for this Mets season. Like they won 70 games, I'd be like, okay, like, you know, I'm not really surprised if they found a way to get to like kind of how the Cubs were last year, where like they were like on the fringe of like being like the last wild card team. I also wouldn't put it past them because they do have some talent on this roster if things break right for them. So like I said, I'm taking it by years. They beat, you know, the game they don't win two nights ago against the Braves. You know, they lost to the Braves last night. Like, always nice beating that team. Like, I just can't stand that franchise in so many ways. So like I said, I'm not out, not in. We're just, you know, just keeping an eye.
Yeah. The Yankees, I'm always all the way in because that's the expectation they've set. And it's the total opposite of the Jets, where like the Yankees had their worst season in 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, actually literally 30 years last year. And they still were above 500. The Jets haven't been above 500 since I was in high school. I was really high on Anthony Volpe last year. I thought it was super unfair. People are just like, assume he sucked. He was a 2020 guy. I'm not saying that's even that crazy, but like 2020 guy to win the Gold Glove and like had the expectation of Derek Jeter without any AAA at bats. And then
Derek Jeter isn't that good anyway, so that's not that high.
Yeah, there you go. And if he's hitting like 400 and he's playing an awesome defense, and he's the leadoff guy and where he should be. Gleyber Torres is a classic five hitter. Like, I just feel good because Stanton and Volpe, I was like, they're awesome, and like you guys should probably like calm down and like. Rizzo sucks, and so does DJ Mayhew, and everyone feels the opposite. So I feel vindicated through 11 games. I also feel vindicated that Carlos Rodon looks good again. He shaved his porn star mustache.
Let's wait. Like,
he's gonna have a mental breakdown at some point.
Yeah, and what happened with Strider's elbow? I don't think Cole's out of the woods either, but. Even as much of a Yankee hitter as I am, I can't even root. That would just be not good for baseball. Yeah, another pitcher having that surgery is
it literally can't be Cole. Like, he's like the one guy it can't happen to because he's he actually throws 250 innings a year and like he's kind of a freak, but it's like it's okay because Garrett Cole doing a, if anyone wants a good laugh, the Yankees had Garrett Cole going to Michael Kay show after he won the Cy Young. And listening to him try to do an interview was one of the funniest. He's like,
he's kind of like if Adam Gase was a genius.
Yeah. Like that's what he should sound like.
Yeah. Like that's literally what he sounds like.
Last one here. You're obviously in the midst of a title race. Your soccer team's in the midst of a title race. Bayern Munich is in the midst of just pure peril. What's your confidence level you can have? Arsenal can kind of choke it up a little bit. Do you feel like where are you at with Liverpool? Like, are you going to get at least a title out of this horrific sports season?
So Arsenal are going to drop points. I feel confident in that. I don't think City are going to drop any more points. And it's, can Liverpool win the seven games they have left? They've only dropped points against the non-Big Six twice this year. And six of their seven games are against non-Big Six teams. The only one is Spurs at home, who don't play well at Anfield. So I think they can do it. Yeah, I think they can do it. It's more just this is when City gets into gear. This is when they turn it on. And they're the team that scare me the most. I do think Liverpool had a better shot of winning this title race than the one they lost. So 4 years ago when City had 98 points, they had 97. And then the one 2 years ago when it came down to the final day and City had 94 and Liverpool, I think, had 93 or 92. I feel better about this title race than those two ones, but it's going to be close. I think they're going to win the Europa League. So, you know, if Klopp gets two trophies and then they're going to hire the sporting manager and, you know, we go again. Because Xabi Alonso rejected both our clubs.
Yeah, unfortunate, but it is what it is. No, I appreciate everybody for listening. I'll be back again on the feed, on the Badlands feed on Saturday. Next week, back to two pods on this feed as well. This will be up on YouTube, full video version, and then the audio version, obviously, wherever you find your podcast. Rate, subscribe, review. I have a cool partnership going to announce next week, probably potentially doing some giveaways, so for some merch. So be on the lookout for that as well.